Episode number 182 with Zach Elwood. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton, and thank you for tuning in. This week, we have Zach Elwood, returning guest. He was on episode 157 before. He's a live poker tells expert. He got his degree in video editing, and he's got a real passion for psychology, specifically as it pertains to the poker table. Modern-day Mike Carroll, I like to call him. And we're also going to announce the winner of the contest. So one lucky listener has won a lifetime membership to Zach Elwood's Live Poker Tells series. So it's awesome. Congratulations in advance. And yes, thank you, Zach. One review here for the podcast, and says, this is the best poker podcast. I'm emphasizing the best. He didn't actually capitalize that, but we'll throw that in. Because they actually talk about poker hands and poker games that they play in. I love this podcast. Thanks. And that is from Swadsworth. So thank you, Swadsworth. And I also want to thank Larry. Thank you for the donation to the show. Your hat is in the mail. If you would like an HUPP hat, you can see pictures of them on Twitter. Go to headsuppoker.poker, click on the Support Us tab, and donate $40 or more and get a hat. I'll mail it straight to you. You can also bookmark us on Amazon. All proceeds go to a scholarship that I have for a graduating senior at my alumni high school. So it's all going to a good cause. It's charity. And remember to get your free 7-minute Tilt Buster by Elliot Rowe. You listen to it before you play. He's got MP3s for everything. I just listened to one just before I recorded this podcast. It was the study booster. I'm going to listen to another one, and it's going to be an online MTT MP3. You listen to these before you play. They get you in the right mindset so you can completely focus on poker. Highly recommend them. I do not play a hand of cards unless I listen to Elliot Rowe first. And that's the God's honest truth. I can't remember the last time I played and didn't listen to one of his tapes. It's got to have been over a year. So, highly recommend those. Use the code HUPOKER and you will score yourself a discount and send some back to the podcast. Before you listen to this part, I would click on the link in the show notes and it'll take you to the hand that Aaron submitted. It's about 6 minutes long, and probably 3.5 minutes of that is Fedor Holtz deciding whether he's going to call or not. So you can see all the tells that Zach and I are going to talk about in this interview first in the first couple minutes of that video. So if you're driving, definitely don't do it. Zach and I are going to be pretty descriptive, but I would recommend you'll get the most out of this show if you click on that link and you watch the YouTube video of this hand that we're talking about. Okay? Zach and I have an interesting interview, and at the end of it, we talk about fake social media accounts. We go over Aaron's hand. I go over a hand that I played at a live cash game in the last couple of days, and then we talk about fake social media. So, without further ado, Zach Elwood. I got supersonic speed that I used to run to you. I stretched my arms for miles and miles and wrapped them. Zach Elwood, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks, Steve. My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, yes. I've referred to you in the past, and I think it's pretty accurate. You're the modern day Mike Caro. You've written several books: Reading Poker Tells, Verbal Poker Tells, Exploiting Poker Tells. You've got a little Poker Tells for 1-2 No Limit with a bunch of examples in there, and of course your video series, which I'm really excited about. You've recently added a couple of videos on there.
Yeah, I just added some videos. They take a while for me to produce, so I don't add them super frequently because I like to make sure they're, you know, up to my standards. So I add just a few a year. So yeah, we added. I added one on smiling when you make big bets, and that kind of stuff. And I added one on eye contact when you make big bets. And what was the other one?
Charlie.
It was a hand example from a 20-minute video analyzing a single hand that Charlie Carroll played in a high roller one drop tournament. And it was just kind of delving into all these factors as I saw them in this one single hand that he talked about first. He talked about an interview, and it was neat to, it's always neat when high stakes players talk about their thought processes and talk about behavior, because it's something that, you know, understandably they don't like to talk about very often. So it's great when you get to hear them talk about their insights, you know.
That was a really interesting hand, because the video before with I'm trying to remember the guy's name, his first name was Jay, it was the heads up of the main event in 2013.
Oh yeah, Jay Farber. Yeah.
Jay Farber, yeah. So he had a real smile. And what was interesting, you tweeted in the moment, if this guy's bluffing, I'll eat my hat.
Right. And, which I hardly ever would do something like that. But I was just so sure that he wasn't bluffing with that smile. Like, the smile was just so loose and dynamic, you know. And so that was an interesting one, because it just seemed so clear to me that he had a good hand, you know.
Yeah, and then the following video was basically, it didn't show the smile because it was the pro, it was Charlie running through it, but he described it pretty well, and he said it was a fake smile that looked uncomfortable. And mm-hmm. I really like that tell personally. I induce it. You know, I'm kind of like, I think Charlie described himself and you as well. You know, you want to be the friendly guy at the table, so you've got rapport with everyone.
Right.
But in those moments when you're facing an all in or you're facing a decision, if you can say some kind of like little quick witted joke, mm-hmm. and it, where it would be socially awkward if they didn't react. And mm-hmm. in that moment, you can see the fake smile or you can see the real smile. Sometimes, you know, when they've got a hand, they'll just bust out laughing and kind of tilt right. their head back, which is pretty telling.
Yeah.
It's a really, really good tell.
I think the only thing to remember about that is I do think, you know, that most of the value you'll get from those spots is like noticing when someone's relaxed and has a strong hand versus, I think it's less useful for, you know, reading weakness, because I think a lot of people, whether they're strong or, you know, whether they have a strong or weak hand, are just going to maintain being stoic, you know? So that's like the MO for a lot of people. So that's why I think it's most useful when you get that, you know, loose, relaxed response to stuff, you know? And, so I definitely think, yeah, it's kind of like fitting in the pattern of, you know, big bet when there's big bet behavior in general, if there's tells available, it's usually going to give you a sense of like relaxation and strength, just because the MO is for most people to remain, you know, pretty locked down.
Yeah.
But I do think, yeah, like Helmuth and Negreanu and those guys, like from all the, you know, kind of well-known, televised spots. I mean, I think they get a lot of value out of those kind of things, like joking around. Like, it might just seem like they're like Hollywooding or, you know, putting a show on for the camera when they interact with opponents. But I do think in a lot of those spots, they're actually getting, you know, picking up on those, you know, is this person relaxed? Is this person not relaxed? You know? So
yeah.
I think it, you know, definitely has its place as long as it's not overdone, you know, cause some people, you know, you probably play with some people that like do it every hand or something, you know?
Yeah.
And think they're like, you know, reading people every single spot. I definitely think it's like reserved for those big spots where you're like, oh, I need some extra information here, and maybe I'll try a little, you know, little behavioral interaction or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not very useful when you're debating calling down with the second or third pair. They may be doing a fake smile because they turned their top pair weak kicker into a bluff. But in other spots, it could be quite useful.
Yeah, I definitely think it's definitely useful. Like, you know, I think most experienced players are using that kind of stuff when they're like really on the fence. Because it's also like the more you use it, the less valuable it is. Because, you know, you use it a couple times and they're like, oh, he's doing this thing, I'm going to just be stoic no matter what, you know. But so it's kind of like the less you use it, the more powerful it is, I feel like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's on the horizon for you? What, I know you've been you're up to 29 videos now on your video series. I tweeted out that it was $150 value, which I found out it's 140.
Well, it'll be going up to 140 soon. Right now it's 124, with just the videos. And I sell another one that's higher, like 175 for the videos and the books. But yeah, I plan on actually raising the price, cause it's been like, I haven't raised the price since 6 videos ago or so. So I been meaning to do that for a while, and I just raised the price incrementally. I think just a factor in how many videos are in there currently, and of course there'll be more over time in the future too. But,
well, it should be 150. Maybe square it off at 30 even videos and then make it 150.
Hey, I think it should be 3,000.
Yes.
I guess.
Right on. We got the winner of the contest, Aaron LaPointe. Congratulations, my friend. Aaron has been a longtime listener of the show, and he was even on the podcast episode 117 last year.
That's cool.
He submitted a hand played by Holtz and Solomon. This was from the big one drop of this year, which was a really interesting hand. Let's see. Do you want to walk through it, Zach? It's basically ace five versus tens versus ace king.
Yeah. So I can't remember exactly what happened. So the ace, I think the ace five, did he shove for 8 million or so? And then
yes, ace Fedora five holds. Was under the gun. They're five handed. Ace five clubs moves all in for 8 mil with the blind levels at 300, 600. That's about 13 big blinds. Then Fedor is next to act, and he's got two black tens. He's got a stack of about 28K. So he's got an under-the-gun shove of 8K. Mm-hmm. He elects to call there with his tens, and as Helmuth narrated shortly thereafter, there's a couple of stacks behind him that have him covered. So that's why he liked just calling there instead of shoving. So then it folds around to Solomon, who's got ace-king of hearts, and he moves all in for 27 mil, which is basically how much Holtz has, Fedor. About 45 big blinds. So what I saw was interesting about this. So now it folds back around to Holtz, and he's got to decide, do I call here with my tens, or do I let him go? Mm-hmm. When I didn't think much about it when I saw the immediate shove, but that's one of the things that you said right away, that it's very weighted to ace king, because if Solomon had ace ace or king king, most everyone would give it at least some, like you quoted, fake thought before shoving. You know, you don't want to look too strong, so you kind of take a second and then you go instead of immediately shoving in. And then with queen queen or jack jack, you'd assume that he gives some thought to Holtz limping with aces or
calling,
or kings.
Yeah, calling. I guess.
Or not limping, but calling the all-in with aces or kings.
Right. Yeah, those were – I definitely think those kind of spots are very weighted to ace-king, like in a spot like this where it's like – it's clear, like, he's got something, right? Because – We can pretty narrow his hand down with so much action in front of him that we can narrow it down to some top holdings. And I think when you have a snap shove like that, it takes out. I think it really makes aces and kings a lot less likely, unless you've seen, you know, a player like do that with aces or kings. It's totally possible he could do it with aces or kings, like make a snap shove like that. It's just not something that it's a pretty rare thing to see. I mean, and same with queens and jacks. People are going to be giving it some thought. So I think that, ace king is kind of the kind of hand where it's like, it's strong enough and it's both strong enough and weak enough to, you know, people are like, it's an obvious snap shove in this spot. So just shove it in.
Yeah. They know it's profitable in that spot. Just shove it. Whereas debating getting max value when you have aces or kings there takes more than three quarters of a second, which is what Solomon took.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to see somebody with aces or kings like just snap it in. You know, I'd have a hard time finding an instance of that. I think in my database of people with aces or kings, it's pretty rare. So then the other thing. Oh, do you want to move on to the other behaviors?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that was one thing. I thought there were a few interesting things in this hand. It was a pretty interesting hand I hadn't seen before, so I'm glad he shared it with us, submitted it. The other thing was Solomon just moving around a lot, like seeming really agitated. Like he touches his face a lot. He's like moving around in his seat a lot. He's looking back and forth. He's doing a lot of stuff. And, you know, one of the things I read about is, you know, from players making big bets, especially I think pre-flop early in the hand when they don't want to scare away action. It's pretty rare to see that behavior with aces or kings there, because with aces or kings, kind of in a similar way to what we were just talking about, they have a instinct to be, you know, they're more thoughtful, they're more mentally focused. And so that kind of leads to more still and stoic behavior, at least for a few moments. You know, they might get, you know, more, a little bit more jerky or act weird after they've put the bet in. But Solomon just immediately is like all jerky and weird with his behavior. So I think that that really makes aces and kings a lot less likely too. Now, you know, disclaimer could be, maybe I haven't watched a lot of Solomon recently. Maybe he's often acting quirky in a lot of spots. That would be the one thing you would want to think about, is how have you seen him acting before in other spots. So maybe if he's really consistently doing that kind of stuff, it wouldn't mean much. But I do think in general, that kind of behavior is going to make the strongest hands less likely. And so then what else do we have? We have, did you want to talk about that anymore? Should I just keep going?
Yeah. Well, one thing with that, I'm running through the textbook example that, that you put in your videos of when people have aces or kings, and it's usually they look at their cards, they sit up a half an inch in their seat, and then they move all in, and they put their hands in front of their mouth, and they don't move an inch. And he did not do that at all.
You know? Right. It's much more common. Not to say that people don't vary, but it's like, you know, all things considered, it's a general tendency for people to just be like, because they're, you know, when you look down at a strong hand, or you flop a strong hand, your initial instinct is to be thinking like, oh, how am I going to maximize this spot, you know? And that leads to like more just stillness and stoicness, you know, yeah. At least for a little bit. So he's interesting though. He's pretty quirky. I would like to actually examine some other hands of his that he played in that game, because I kind of wonder how he does that. I'd like to see some comparison spots, you know.
You might have a video number 30 the works here.
That's the interesting thing. When you see somebody doing something just really quirky, it does make you think like, well, I want to see how this guy acts in other spots, because you're basically looking for imbalances. You know, it's kind of a clue that when you see somebody do anything kind of like unusual, you it immediately makes you think, well, is this guy imbalanced in other spots? You know, and so that kind of gives you a clue that maybe you should be watching this person. You know, when you're playing with them or whatever, you know, watch the person who does unusual things more, because it's more likely that they're going to be imbalanced.
It would be neat to see the entire final table of that. And
yeah.
If he does pick up queens or kings or something, and see how he reacts then.
I would like to see that. I wonder if it's on PokerGo or something. I haven't really looked for it or anything.
I haven't either, but I think I'm going to look it up after this interview.
Yeah. So the other what else do we have?
Oh, the shrugging. See.
The shrugging. Yeah, he does a slight shrug kind of gesture with his hand, which I didn't really think means much. I have a video on that, I think, in my video series, and it, you know, I talk about how I don't think it means much pre-flop, because I think it's basically implying like I don't care much about the situation, which people with both strong hands and weak hands are, you know, you can easily imagine both of them doing, and you can see that with both strong and weak hands a good amount. I do think that because of the high stakes situation of this spot, it makes it more likely to be strength, just because it's kind of more like an, you know, a big bet on the river situation, where I think little shrugs will make strong hands more likely. So considering this is such a, you know, important spot and so much action in front of him, I do think the little shrug does make strength more likely. I kind of remember, I don't know if you've ever seen that hand with Beth Shack, where she has pocket aces and Helmut also has pocket aces, and she does a lot of this little shrugging stuff.
She shrugged there and turned up her hands like about 40 times in 3 seconds before she announced all in.
So that's kind of the extreme thing. I think it varies a good amount of pre-flop. Yeah. But it kind of reminded me of that, just because when it's like the more intense the situation is, I think the more that shrugging makes a strong hand more likely. But you will see it sometimes from, you know, players who are bluffing in lesser spots. I think like a standard, like just shipping in 10 big blinds and a little shrug gesture when they have a weaker hand. But in this case, in this case, you know, ace king can actually be seen as a weaker hand compared to this scenario.
You get a UTG shove for 13 bigs. Yeah. You get a calm call there from a guy that has got you covered, and then now it's on you.
Right. So in this case, it's kind of a good example of like how we can see those kind of shrugging gestures with a weak, in this context, a weaker hand.
Yeah, he's never doing that with 8-7 of hearts because he's got it all in there. In this scenario, ace-king isn't as strong as it seems.
It's near the bottom of his range, basically, because when you consider, you know, what hands is he really doing this with, it's near the bottom, you know. It's probably really the bottom of his range, you know.
Yeah, maybe ace-king off, but I can't imagine him doing this with ace-queen.
Right, yeah, I can't see him doing it with ace queen, especially when if you factor in the behavior, you know, it's like he's definitely not snap shoving with ace queen.
No, that would have been a little bit more thought than that.
it's hard to imagine doing that with ace queen at all. But so I thought that was interesting. Basically, long story short, I don't think the shrug in that situation means much. But if it means anything, it's in such a big spot, it's probably, I just don't think it means much pre flop in general. Okay, so let's see. Moving on. One little thing. Were you going to say something?
Oh, I was going to say, you mentioned putting all the chips in the pot moving all in, instead of just doing the Pat did pro thing where you grab one chip, toss it in, and say all in.
Right, yeah. This was kind of a small thing, but I thought it was worth mentioning. It seems like I might be mistaken, but did you see him put all his chips in? I think he put most of them or all of them in.
No, he put them all in. He looked at his cards, and the way he picked them up was kind of weird. He picked them up high. Looked at them down low both of them up. I don't know why he did that. But
yeah, let's talk about that next. We'll talk about the putting the chips in thing, which it's a small thing, but you know, it's kind of like the difference between, you know, putting all your chips in versus, like you said, just like saying all in or throwing a all in card in or putting in, you know, one chip and saying I'm all in. It's that disparity between those two extremes. And in this case, he put all the chips in, which I say is putting all the chips in for a big bet or an all in bet is weighted towards weakness a little bit. It's a small thing, but it's weighted towards a weaker hand. And whereas not putting the chips in the pot is weighted towards strength. And I think you know you can kind of make sense of this because you know, putting all the chips in the pot is kind of like an expression of confidence and certainty a little bit. So it makes sense that somebody with weaker hands is going to be wanting to express that confidence or certainty. And it's also about like trying to make sure your large bet is understood and not misinterpreted by somebody behind you. You know, like if you just whisper all in and put one chip in, they might, you know, or put a call amount in, they might misunderstand and act behind you, or and you might get more action or something.
Yeah, you might get the guy behind you that's got his headphones in, and if you don't put everything in, then he may think that you only called or did a min raise or something.
Right, exactly. That's an extreme example, but it's kind of like those are the kinds of factors that lead to, you know, the pattern being slightly present, even if it's a small kind of pattern.
Something for me. I need to just always put them all in because after reading what you wrote and you telling me now, I think I'm unbalanced there.
Yeah, I think the most, you know, it's a pretty small thing, but I think the way it's most useful is like if you see somebody, you know, sometimes how it plays out is you'll see somebody with a strong hand just make like a slight whispered all in and throw in, you know, an amount, one stack of chips for a call or something. And, you know, like, that's something that a bluffer is hardly ever going to do that behavior because, yeah, they're just going to be afraid that it's going to be misinterpreted by somebody behind them or, you know, that the people behind them don't know that they went all in. So it's kind of just showing that they're relaxed and not really worried about the interpretation. So that's kind of the extreme way it shows up. But I think there are these, you know, kind of subtler things that make it slightly more likely one way or the other. So it's easy to imagine Solomon, if he had aces or kings here, like him just relaxedly saying all in and throwing in a single chip or not throwing in any chips or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's easy to imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if we could find an example of him doing just that, you know.
What are your thoughts when he picks his cards up and looks at – now, this is like what you'll see from the older guy at the table that can't quite see well and maybe doesn't play that often, but he physically picks his cards up off the table.
That's so weird.
Holds him about a foot from his face and then puts him down.
Yeah, that was so weird. I don't know what to think about that. Like,
but he's never doing that with aces, right?
I just don't know. I mean, I agree with you that he must have looked at them earlier and then was just putting on this weird show of like pick, you know, like, oh, I'm just going crazy, you know. I don't know what to think of it really. It's just so weird. Like, I have a hard time believing that's how he actually initially looked at his cards. And plus, you know, I don't know if we mentioned, he actually exposed a card enough to where the tournament director, the floor person, made him turn over the ace.
Yes.
You know,
and so maybe mistake.
it was some sort of purposeful thing, but I can't imagine it, because it made Fedor's decision easier to see the ace, because then you don't have to worry about jacks or queens or anything. You're basically looking at ace king or aces there, you know, and ace king is more, you know, more probable than aces. So it actually, I don't think it was a purposeful thing on, you know, an angle shoot to like expose the ace or something. It was just very weird. I think he was just, if I had to guess, I think he was just trying to act kind of maniacal. Like, he had looked at his cards already and then was just like, oh, I'm going to act all goofy in this spot, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, hard to say. I think somebody did say he had been acting, like, playing. Somebody said on Twitter, like, he had been playing like the rent was due or something. So maybe he had been just playing really weird in the leading up to that for some reason, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's interesting. I'd like to see the whole five on the table.
Yeah, I would like to see what led up to that, because yes, with somebody saying he was playing crazy, maybe he had a, you know, maybe he had a dinner date with Pamela Anderson or something. You know?
maybe make
another sex tape, you know, with Paris Hilton or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
you know about that stuff, right? The Paris Hilton sex tape.
Yes, I do.
Okay. make sure people know about that preference.
Yes, I've watched that a time or two.
Oh, okay.
An under exaggeration.
Gotcha. Very honest of you to admit. I've seen it myself. Yes.
Well, thank you, Aaron, for that hand. That was a good one. And congratulations, you won. So we'll be getting you your lifetime membership to the Live Poker Tells by Zach Elwood.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. Yeah, I'm glad he sent that in.
It was. I've got one that I played a few days ago that I want to get your thoughts on, Zach. I was on a road trip with my dad, and he's got one of those old classic cars, and we're going to a probably the biggest classic car convention in Louisville, Kentucky, that that there is every year. There's like 11,000 cars this year. On the trip out there, we stopped by a casino. One of our hotels was walking distance to a casino, so we went over there, had dinner, and then I played about an hour of cash. They had 1-3 no limit and 3-6 limit. So I sat down at the 1-3 table, and we'd been playing, I don't know, maybe half an hour or so. I've got a stack of about 300. And I'm UTG plus 2, and I pick up 2 red aces. So I raise it to 15. It had folded to me in UTG plus 2. I raise it to 15. I get a call from a middle position guy. He's got about a similar stack. He's probably in his mid-30s. He's a construction manager. He just put it in a big H&M clothing store. And he frequently has to travel to the area to do construction management jobs. So I got the impression he makes fairly good money as a construction manager. Mm-hmm. His company's consistently flying him out there, and he's definitely a recreational player. Just judging by the by what he was telling me. Mm-hmm. So he calls in middle position. Then on the button. We get a button call and both blinds fold. The button, I saw him, he'd recently sat down, and the one hand that stood out in my mind with him was he did a 2/3 pot bet on the river as a bluff, got called, and when he showed his hand, I can't remember what his hand was, but I remember thinking, that was a raised pot, and I never would have called with 6-8 offsuit or whatever he had there, like that was a bad call. You know, so I did not get the impression that he was a pro.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's probably not too many at a 1-3 table, but this is what we got. All right. So, again, ace-ace, I raised to 15, get a call from middle position and a call from the button. So with the blinds in there, we should have a pot of 49. And the flop is 3-4-5 rainbow.
Mm.
We got ace-ace.
Mm-hmm.
So with a pot of 49, What are you thinking here? We're first act.
Well, I'd bet, probably bet. I don't know. Depends on the game, but I don't know. 35 or something.
35. Okay. All right. I bet 30. I thought it'd be a mistake to check here and just give him a free card. But I bet out 30. Middle position folds and button calls. Okay. So button's the guy that I saw that made a bad call before
Right. He could have
pre-flop.
anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He could. He's pretty white, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. So he calls 30. When he calls, he takes maybe 4 seconds. Something like that. So it wasn't a snap call. All right. Then we go to the turn. The turn is the ace of spades. Okay. So the board now is 3, 4, 5, and then an ace. And actually, I wrote spade, but it doesn't matter. It just completes the rainbow. So there's no flush draw out there. So we got a set now on a pretty wet board. Any two makes a straight.
You had
And
said you said he bluffed before, right?
he did. I saw him bluff on the river. It's there's 109 in the pot, and the original guy, he's got about 250 to start the hand. So the effective stacks now to start are about 250. What are you thinking here on this turn?
I check it.
You check it. And what's your reason for checking?
I think there's a good chance from how you described him that he takes a shot at it no matter what he has with a lot of weak hands. And yeah, then we're inducing and likely have him dominated. I think it's a scary enough board. He gives up a lot of weaker hands that he might, you know, turn into a that he might try to bluff with or think he's ahead with on the turn or whatever. So yeah, I just trying to induce from a lot of different hands.
Okay. I think that, yeah, and he's probably betting for value here, things like two pairs, like 4 or 5.
Yeah, he could have slow played and but then we're also, you know, if you bet here and get called, I mean, or action, there is always likelihood that he flopped the straight or something or flopped it, you know, so flopped the straight or got the straight on the turn. So it's kind of like a balance between, you know, when you're ahead, when you're behind, I think. And I think you're inducing a lot of bluffs and weaker hands to bet on the turn or
Okay.
I don't know, my thought.
Yeah, I like your check. I don't. I bet 40 into 109. And he takes a second and then he grabs I think what he thought was a 100 chip stack, you know, $25 chips, and he pushes that out. It ended up being 95. So it's 55 for us to call. Let's see what's in the pot. 148.
Yeah, well, I definitely call.
Okay. The checking was a move. Okay. All
Well,
right.
I don't know.
I like your check though there.
I don't claim to be an expert in a lot of these things. I mean, I think it's a lot, especially at lower stakes. There's a lot of exploitative stuff that I do, you know, that I wouldn't. It would be hard to me for me to know unless I had a sense of like playing with the guy for a little bit. Like I might do a different decision, but yeah, I don't know. I think checking makes a lot of sense. I don't think you're. I think you're seldom getting action from hands you beat is mainly the reason
Yeah.
when you're at the turn. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay. All right. Well, I call. And then the river is a 9. So final board is ace 9, 3, 4, 5. And we got pocket aces for top set. Do you see any reason to bet here? Or?
No, not when he raised you.
Yeah. Okay. We check. He moves all in for 107, and
It's pretty
there's
gross.
4 or 5 in the pot. Okay.
I think it's pretty gross, but I think how much more was it? Yeah, it was.
405 in the pot, and he bets 107.
Yeah, I mean, I think you gotta call. I mean, you also gotta. I mean, I don't think he's bluffing here, but I also think there are. I could totally imagine, as described, I could totally imagine him doing this with two pair and a set in lower sets, you know. So I think he, kind of have to call. And plus, you know, it's 1-3, so he could, who knows, these people, these guys will do lots of weird stuff. So
he could be doing this with 5-6 and just bust it open. Okay. All right. I flick in a call and, he flopped it. He had ace deuce. So
Yeah. That's a tough one. But I definitely think the I like the turn check too, because when you are behind, you're gonna potentially lose the minimum, you know.
Yes.
Then he's the one
betting 40, and we call, and then on the river he tries to squeak us out with $50 instead of.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah. Or maybe you bet. Yeah. However
60,
much he bets.
70, whatever it is. But
I think it's a good balance on the turn of checking, because you're, I don't think you're getting action from people you beat, and I think you're getting a lot of weaker hands to bet. And when he's ahead, you're losing the minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So,
cool.
Was there any interesting behavior in there? I might have missed that you said. Was there anything?
I'm trying to articulate what it was that I saw when he raised me on the turn, because I really felt like I should fold the turn by the way he was acting, but I thought, am I really laying down top set here? I feel like he's going to do the same thing with, like, is he going to do this with pocket fives? And then I was like, well, I was thinking, wouldn't he have raised my bet on the flop if he had a set of threes, a set of fours, or a set of fives?
Mm-hmm.
I think he would. So I can kind of almost take those out of his range. I don't know. Maybe you're right. It is a 1-3 table. Maybe they're trying to get cute here and just call with that. I don't know. But, he just looked so relaxed and calm, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he definitely puts you in a tough spot. Cause I mean, I don't see how you can fold for only 50 more or whatever it was on the turn. I mean, and then on the river, I feel like you're definitely committed. So, I mean, even if you think, you know, there's a very good chance he's got you beat, you're just getting such, you know, he's giving you such good odds. So it's,
I did the math later and it was like 4.42 to 1. And I'm like, so am I just drawing? I was trying to do it at the table and, you know, it was just a pile of chips in there. I'm trying to add up what the bets were and everything.
Nah,
I'm
like, what?
I'm like,
so
I think I'm getting like 4-1 here. I'm okay. Well, I'm drawing to 10 outs then, I guess, right?
I mean, that's, yeah, you'd have to be so sure you were beat. And then I think even then, like, you know, on the turn anyway, I just think you're getting good odds, pretty good odds to fill up. And yeah, it's a pretty gross spot. So I don't see, as you played it, like, I don't see how you can avoid losing that money.
Yeah. Okay.
It's pretty, yeah.
Yeah. I like the check on the turn. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. Interesting.
There was one thing I wanted to ask you about that, doesn't really have a whole lot to do with poker, or maybe it does, but you've mentioned fake social media accounts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know much about what I've done with those? Or
what? Elaborate. Tell us what.
So I just I did some work on some of these fake American Facebook accounts, which mostly were these Macedonian origin fake accounts, and some of them are like, you know, you don't really know where they come from, but a lot of them are tied to Macedonian era people who make money off fake news sites. So they have all these fake news sites and they make their money by, you know, driving traffic to the sites. And so there's all these fake Facebook accounts that a lot of them, the more interesting ones are the ones that are imitating Americans. So it'll be like, you know, a young, attractive woman who's from, you know, New York City and teaches at wherever and has all these details. And there's just all these signs that they're fake, you know, and evidence that they're fake, like their URL will have, when you look at the profile URL, it has like a Middle Eastern name or something, you know, as opposed to the, you know, the more English name they're showing. Yeah. So things like that. So I kind of got into it and I put together this database of all the more interesting ones I found. And then that kind of led to, my work got written about in a New York Times and a Washington Post article, a couple articles about these fake American accounts, which people hadn't really focused on. That's the only reason I thought it was interesting, because there was a lot of stuff about the proven Russian stuff, which was like much less common than these fake Macedonian kind of accounts that are all over the place. Like they're still all over the place. I can easily find you many of them very easily. So it's still a rampant problem. And I was just surprised that all the focus was on like the Russian stuff and what was proven to be, instead of like all these fake accounts, which were still going strong, you know? So that was kind of led to me looking into that. It wasn't like I was the only one who knew about it. It was just, I was just surprised that, you know, I'd seen articles about it, but it was just less talked about, you know, I hadn't seen like some big articles about it. I'd seen like BuzzFeed or Occasional or whatever talk about it, but it wasn't getting a lot of press. So that was what interested me.
Well, what's the purpose of them making? I just can't imagine wasting my time on a fake social media account.
There's potentially big money in it. I mean, there's less so now that it's become more. It's more competitive because more people have done it. But you know, these people make money by they drive traffic to the fake news site, which has an ad network on it. So the ad network pays you for all the views you get, right? So it's all about driving traffic to these fake news sites, and they all have names like conservativeusa.com or just generic, you know, kind of word salads of words that they choose for their sites that sound like kind of legitimate on the surface. But they just, you know, they're just filled with, you know, they'll recycle real news too. So it's a combination of just like outlandish, you know, clickbait headlines and also just real news.
So the advantage to making it fake is that you can create some clickbait. Outstanding drama story that yeah. Everyone is just drawn to and they click on it. Whereas exactly. If it was the real story and a lot less enticing, then they wouldn't get as much traffic.
Right. The incendiary headlines get people to click. So in Facebook groups, you can find people that, you know, they're getting all angry, and in the comments, they're getting all angry. And then, you know, like you can calmly explain to them, like, that's a fake headline. That's a fake news site that gets money from, you know, people clicking on it. And I've actually had pretty good progress, like talking, you know, calmly to people in those groups and being like, by the way, you know, this is a fake news site. You can read this article about how these things work, and they're just trying to get traffic and lure you in. So they make money by getting you to click on their site, you know? I think there's less money in it than there was because some of the ad networks have cracked down on it. Like Google ad networks started blocking known fake sites, and so they wouldn't give them revenue, you know? So there's more exposure about it. So it's become harder for them to make money, but it's still the big problem. Like it's kind of developing countries where the money goes a lot farther. Like, you know, the Philippines is another place that produces a lot of those because, you know, even if they make a few dollars a day off of it, that's a big deal to them.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Yeah. So that was kind of some work I was putting in. And also, yeah, I had this site I was working on right now, whoistruepundit.com. It's just an analysis of this real influential fake news site called True Pundit. So I was kind of putting together some of the obvious lies that he'd been caught in and just exposing that he was not to be a trusted source, even though a lot of people share him on Twitter and stuff. You can see people sharing that website. But it's hard to, you know, a lot of people just want to believe what they want to believe. And it's also confusing because some of the fake news websites, they do, I mean, their MO is to share actual news stories mixed in with the fake news. So, you know, people are like, well, that news story is real. They're not a fake news site because that one's real. It's like, yeah, you know, like 70% of their content might just be recycled content, and the other 30% is these egregiously fake, you know, stories. Yeah. You know, so I'm just trying to do my part to like spread more skeptical, having people be more skeptical about what's online, you know.
Yeah, and they don't believe that a sheep was crossbred with a duck-billed platypus and turned into a furry little beaver-looking thing.
There's all sorts of, yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because the, you know, right-wing has its brand of fake news. I mean, there's also liberal fake news, which is more dedicated to, like, health and medical stuff. You see a lot of, like, you know, bullshit, like, medical conspiracy theory kind of stuff on the liberal side because, I don't know, that's more of a thing, you know, hippies are scared of, you know.
Yes, yes.
So
it, the granola, you know, crowd.
Right, right. It's like fluoride will kill you, you know.
Yes. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on again, Zach. And I appreciate it. You guys can get Zach's books. He's got them on Amazon, or just go to headsuppoker.poker. I've got all those books there. When you click on those, it kicks back a little bit to the podcast. Doesn't cost you an extra dime, and it's a win-win. You can... go ahead, Zach.
Oh, nice. I was going to say thanks. Yeah. Buy him on Steve's site and give him some kickback.
Right on. And you can follow Zach on Twitter @apokerplayer. His website is readingpokertells.com. And I highly recommend the video series. I'm going through it a third time. So I mentioned last week that I think this series that you've put together is good after you watch the first one to refresh it. And, you know, once a year, maybe just make it an annual thing before you go out to the WSOP each year, watch these videos. And, you know, you're probably only going to get 15 or 20% each time when you go through them. But as that adds up over time, it'll become instinct. So
yeah, not to toot my own horn too much, but I had a pretty prominent player contact me. I can't say who it is, but he was like, "I watched your video series again right before the WSOP, and I really think it helped, you know, help my performance." And that was really nice to hear, because it's, you know, hearing that it helps people is great. I don't often hear that. I mean, I hear it a good amount, but it's just always nice when people tell me that, and especially if they're experienced players, you know.
Well, keep doing it, man. Like I said, you're the modern day Mike Carroll. You've put together this program, and you know, with your degree in video editing, this is quite a nice fit.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I like to be called the sane genius as opposed to the mad genius. That's my brand. That's my brand name.
Yes.
So. Okay. Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate you.
All right, brother.
Yeah. Thanks,
you have
man.
A good one.
Right. You
and
too.
Thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
How bad do you want it? Are you talking about it or you're being about it? Greatness is no joyride. Greatness is full of adversity and obstacles. How bad do you want it? How dedicated are you to achieving your greatness? Too many times we wake up in the morning and we're ungrateful for that day. We're awake, we're blessed. The world is full of negativity. We don't have to be negative on ourselves. I hear people talking about, "I am unlucky, I'm unsuccessful, I am fat, I am ugly." No, you are not. Let's change our "I am." It's gonna fuel our day, it's gonna fuel our life. I am successful, I am powerful, I am great, I am amazing. That's the words that have to follow our "I am." It's going to fuel your life. Let's start taking it with passion. Let's start being amazing. Use your "I am" to change the world. If your actions are not in line with your beliefs, stop lying to yourself. There is nobody in this world that can go out there and be great for you. You got to make a conscious decision to stop making excuses, strap up your heart, stick out your chest, and get it done. There's nobody in this world that's going to give you what you want. You're gonna have to go out there and get what you want by working hard.